Our reading for this morning continues where we left off last week in the Gospel of Matthew, reading in chapter 5, verses 21 through 37. And this is part of a long passage of Jesus gathering the crowds and his disciples on the hillside. It begins with the Beatitudes, the blessed are those, or happy are those who are, and then continues with some teachings. And particularly this morning, there are four different things that Jesus is speaking on. You have heard it said to those in ancient times, you shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment. But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say, you fool, you will be liable to the hell of fire. So when you are offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave the gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are on the way to court with him, or your accuser may hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the guard, and you will be thrown in prison. Truly, I tell you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to go into hell. It was also said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that anyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of unchastity, causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. And again, you have heard that it was said of those of ancient times, you shall not swear falsely, but carry out the vows you have made to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is God's footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great King. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything more than this comes from the evil one. Let us listen to what God's Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God. Would you join me in prayer? Gracious God, may the words that we speak and the thoughts that we think always be acceptable to you. O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. As Candace mentioned in our time with our young at heart, in a couple of days, it's Valentine's Day. And my son is 2.5, and yet he will receive a card from each kid at the day home that he is part of, because that's how they do it to make sure that every child receives the same number and that nobody gets left out. Now, on the same day, many of you will probably exchange cards, share a box of chocolates, or maybe some flowers with a partner, or a special meal with someone that you love. And I have to confess that I will not be one of them. And that isn't meant to be a slight on my husband or to give him an excuse to forget. There are two main reasons why I don't usually mark Valentine's Day. The first is because our wedding anniversary is actually later in the month of February, and I would far rather mark that accomplishment. And the second, and really the main reason that I don't really like marking Valentine's, is because I don't really want to buy into what I consider the commercial celebration of what has been termed as love. It's mushy, it's sentimental, it's sappy, and it gets slapped onto a card or wrapped up nice and tidy with a bow. It bothers me quite greatly that according to National Geographic, that the average North American person will spend somewhere around $103 on gifts, on meals, and entertainment for Valentine's Day. And just think for a moment if that average expenditure was placed in our offering plates this morning instead. That'd be fabulous. For me, love is far more than simply how we feel on a given day, or the stuff that we buy for each other as gifts. I once heard it said that justice is what love looks like in public. And if that is true, then how we treat each other in both private and in public, I think says a whole lot more than about love. Than a box of Godiva chocolates. Not that I would say no to a box of Godiva chocolates. How we treat the widow, the orphan, the outcast, the sinner, the meek, the lowly, our partner, our children, our grandchildren, our friends, are reflections of how actively we show our love for God. Whether we keep the commandments and serve one another in the name of Christ speaks more eloquently about love than any fancy greeting card can or does. At the heart of the matter, I think love is very much a choice for us to be in relationship with someone else, a choice to live in a way of love. Now, some of you might remember the story of how the Israelite people wandered in the desert for 40 years. And when the children of Israel stood on the edge of the promised land, Moses challenges them with a sermon. And if you actually want to read it, you can go home and read it in the book of Deuteronomy. But he says these words, "I've placed in front of you life and good, death and evil. Love God, walk in God's ways, keep the commandments so that you will live, truly live, passionately, exuberantly, blessed by God. Choose life so that you and your children will live. Love God, because God is life itself." Love is a choice. Life is a choice. But what does it mean for us to choose life in the face of death? What does it mean to choose love in the face of apathy, violence, and hatred? Lately, it seems like death is one of the things that it's all we hear, and it's all that we seem to know. You can tell when it's going to be one of those days. You crawl out of bed, and then you crawl back in. You get stuck in traffic. You sit down to a cup of hot coffee or hot tea, and then your boss asks you to do something that's going to last until your coffee or tea is stone cold. You dial a wrong number, and of course somebody answers it. You feel bored and cranky with even your dearest friends. You give rather curt answers. You think the worst of the people around you. You stop exercising. You stop praying. You stop reading. You stop caring because you know nothing really seems to matter. You feel tired and older than you are. And unfortunately, these are feelings that I think most of us here can relate to having. But we also know those moments when we have chosen life, days that we know that we have been blessed by God abundantly, to live life exuberantly. we wake up and realize, hey, you know what? I still have an hour that I could sleep. You take a long, hot shower, and what a luxury that is. You hear your favorite song, and you sing along, even though you might not be able to sing. You smile at yourself. You think something kind about someone who usually drives you crazy. You get a phone call from a friend who loves you. You accidentally overhear someone say something nice about you. You get good mail. You listen carefully. You think the best of those around you. You care for broken people that you have never cared for before. You fall in love with someone that you have fallen in love with 1,000 times before. Your best friend hugs you and it feels safe and secure. You pray joyfully. You see that life is beautiful and you are grateful for it. And I hope that each one of us here has known something of these feelings, something of what it means to be blessed. So how is it that we choose life when we are faced with the complete uncertainty of walking into a new land, of walking into uncharted territory? How do we choose love? Well, we don't do it without guidance, nor do we do it without a leader. Jesus gives us commandments to follow. Now, at first hearing, I will totally admit that this morning's reading that I shared with you from the Gospel of Matthew is extremely harsh. Typically, when we think of the commandments, we think of them as being a set of rules of thou shalt nots. And as a result, when we hear passages like this one, it seems as though Jesus is making it even harder for us to be one of his followers, to be one of his disciples. And this portion of Matthew's gospel introduces 4 of 6 contrasts that show what God's law really means and where its priorities lie. The gospel, the good news, is not really so much about rules, but rather about getting to the heart of the matter, which is relationships based on living love. Of course, Jesus being Jesus, he uses Middle Eastern humor and irony, and he deliberately exaggerates to make his point quite clear. I don't think we're meant to take it literally that we should go out and gouge out our eyes or cut off our hands. Otherwise, we'd find a great number of Jesus' followers who were disfigured and handless. Jesus is talking about issues that the church of Matthew's day were really struggling with. The first being hate or hidden anger. And essentially, he's saying that the important thing is not just to avoid murder, but not to hate. And that is because hate leads to violence. It is no more a condemnation of the feeling of anger, which often comes with hurt and pain, than the next contrast is condemning sexual feelings. The gospel writers of Matthew, of Mark, of Luke, and of John had no hesitation whatsoever about speaking about the fact that Jesus was, and very much, got angry. The whole turning over the tables in the temple, he got angry. But it is what we do with our anger that counts. Anger turned to hate abuses people. And it often starts with words of hurt, with words of abuse. Jesus goes on to list some of them from his time. The next contrast that comes up in next week's gospel lesson speaks of retaliation, which is also a form of hate. And then the sixth one also talks, which is also part of next week's reading, matches the very first one because it really has kind of the same theme of loving one's enemies. In all of Jesus' teaching, the foundation is God's love and God's openness to all. At the heart of each of these contrasts, of each of these commandments, is the importance of personal relationships. Divorce is understandable. At times, it's even necessary. And for some people, it's inevitable. But what might happen if spouses could extend mercy to each other as their relationship ends? Avoiding murder, really, it's not really that much to brag about. But moving from anger to reconciliation, to making amends, sure is. Retaliation is tempting, and retribution is very much part of our legal system, but love forgives. And I can't help but wrestle with these really, really tough words as I think about my own family. Like many of you, I come from a somewhat dysfunctional family. I think most of us do. And 12 years ago, when the last of my grandparents died, my Nana, some hurtful words were said between my uncle and my father. Unfortunately, due to stubbornness, another family trait, and the inability to forget the things that were said, they haven't spoken to each other since. And to me, it's really sad. And it is the very last thing that my Nana, my grandmother, would have wanted between two of her children. And I remembered their fallout with one another quite vividly after our middle child, Heather, died. In the days following her sudden death, a lot of assumptions were made and many things got said that, while well-intended, still really hurt. And yet, as upset as I was, as angry as I sometimes got, I realized something that I think is incredibly vital for all of us. It's more important for me to choose love, to choose to be in relationship with somebody else, than to let that relationship end because of hurt or because of grievances. It's so much more vital for us to not be alone, to be in that relationship, to be reconciled with each other, than for me to be right. And I share this with you this morning not to make an example out of myself or my own experience, my family's as messed up as the next one, but rather to be open and to be honest about how hard it is for us to choose love, how hard it is for us to live that love out. No one is exactly alike. And that means that sometimes people don't agree, because we don't all think alike either. And that means there are going to be days that we get frustrated with each other. There are going to be days that we get angry with each other. But when that happens, it's important for us to try not to hurt one another. We all carry God's love in our hearts. And part of how that love grows, part of how I think love is lived out, is when we remember to care for one another, to care for people, even when we're feeling frustrated or angry. Life is too short for us to stay hateful and angry with one another. The life that God chooses for us, the life that God pulls us into, is life that is characterized by relationships. Relationships that are whole and not broken. Life that is lived in mutual support of one another. God's commandments are not a set of rules that we have to follow, but rather choices of a way to truly live. God desires individuals, communities, and all of creation, I think, to live in whole relationship with God, with each other, and with all of this beautiful world that we live in. Choosing the way of God's heart, as illustrated by God's commandments, is to choose life, is choosing to live love. And friends, my prayer for us all is that this may be so. Thanks be to God.